Anyway. So this one is risk adjusted, but it goes with, it looks at something over in section AB. This delirium measure, if you look at your MDS form, look at section, it's on the inside cover of the front page. It's the background information on admission. It's the face sheet. It's AB5. It's prior residential history. If you'll notice in AB that these are all the places your resident could have resided or where they resided in the 5 years prior to coming to be at your facility. And most of them are institutionalized settings, right? You see there's a MRDD or other nursing home or... But you'll notice two things are missing. Home, their own home, right? And you also see they're missing as a hospital. And the reason what they do is that this is adjusted because if somebody who has lived in an institutionalized environment, they're probably, if you see any indicators here, they're probably based on cognitive issues. But if you have people that are coming from home or from the hospital, well, then they may have not been institutionalized, and this has become much more serious. Does that make sense? So all of a sudden, it's going to be risk adjusted based on where they come from. As an FYI for you, 25% of the people who you admit from a hospital setting will show symptoms of delirium, true delirium. So almost a quarter of the people that come through your building who are direct admits from the hospital. Why? They've had surgery, they've had medications, they're all out of sorts, okay? But just let you know that this information comes from the admission MDS, and they use it to risk adjust this item. Now, if you didn't know this, if you go to the Nursing Home Compare website, now you don't have this as a handout, but what happens is that they've now, for each of the 14 quality measures, they've given a blurb to the public about why this particular area is important and why it's important to them as a consumer. Because do you realize that there's a checklist on this Nursing Home Compare website, a checklist that they can print out and they're supposed to use when they walk in your building? That they have things to check out about the odors and this and that and this and that. But then they go through, they say why this is important, why this measure should be important to them. Well, this is what they say about delirium. It says delirium is not a normal part of aging, okay? And it should not be confused with dementia. Isn't that kind of funny? Not confused with dementia. But it's a serious condition that requires urgent medical attention, and that death is possible with this area. And so they're kind, you see how this they're building this up and telling the public that this is a very serious area. And so they say finding and treating the cause of delirium can ensure proper treatment and blah, 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 blah. So what you need to do is make sure is that whoever is responsible for the delirium wrap, that they understand how to do that assessment. It's a very lengthy assessment. It's outlined in the wrap information, which is provided in the back of the user's manual. But remember, the whole goal is to rule it out. But again, it's only based on how good your data is to begin with. If your nursing staff don't know what to look for, if they don't understand that it's normal or not normal, because again, we're going to talk about with the MDS. The MDS does not care if something is normal or not normal. Did this happen or didn't this happen? Don't put any kind of spin on it. You follow the directions in the manual, so it says, did it happen or didn't it happen? So they want to know, this is it new or not new, or is it new or worse? So now it's your knowledge of that area, okay? Short stay people who have had moderate to severe pain, okay? Look at section J2 of the MDS. This is where this section comes from. This has been here all along. Did you find it for me? OK, Okay, this is on the PPS, this is a 14-day PPS assessment. If you look at section J2, this is an interesting item because the way this will flag or way that this will show up for your percentage points could be one of two options. So it's either or, I mean, it's either one of these. So the first way this will flag on a short stay person, remember 14 days, so they're gonna assume that by the 14th day, you've hopefully started to get some pain under control. But kind of the point is that you'll look at J2 and there's two items. There's pain frequency, and then J2B is pain intensity. Now, what you would explain to the public on this one is that where this comes from on the MDS, that the intensity and the frequency are not based on the same event. Because frequency is frequency of any kind of pain, but the intensity is the highest that ever occurred, ever, in the 7 days. So if I have mild pain daily, but one time I felt it hit my head, bam, ow, then it looks like I have daily pain, right? But it's excruciating. So it looks like to the public I see excruciating pain daily. Well, that's not true. But the first way it pops up is that if you've marked pain daily, so J2A is equal to a, is it two? And then, and moderate pain. And so the highest intensity they've had is moderate. So pain daily, and the highest intensity they ever had was moderate. Or if that's not the case, then it's basically if they ever had excruciating pain. Ever. So either one of those two will make it pop up. But again, the key for this one is being able to explain what this measure is and how it's calculated. Okay? This is one of your quality measures for New York. This is the one where IPRO is working on to improve your quality measure. And there's no risk adjustment for this measure at all. Why is this important? What have they told the public about this particular area? Well, it said that residents should always be checked regularly by a nursing home staff to see if they are having pain. And you're looking, and so hopefully, IPRO has a lot of good information on pain, but you know, pain is the fifth vital sign. You should be looking at verbal and nonverbal signs of pain. But they basically say here, if pain is not treated, then the resident can't perform a lot of the things that they would normally do. And those of you know, if you're in pain, right, having back pain right now, any kind of pain, it influences your entire life. So they're basically saying that, gosh, if the more pain you have in the building, the likelihood of having a good quality of life is diminished. And so they're telling the public, check to make sure how the facility is managing their pain. Okay? And you're going to wonder why I have a horse for pressure sores. Because at the beginning part of this month, I was on vacation, and I was in Montana on a 2-day cattle drive. And I had pressure sores based on the cattle drive. So I thought the best way for me to explain pressure sores is to talk about a horse. Okay? Has anybody here ever been to Montana? It is the most fun state ever. You need to go to Montana sometime because it is a cool state. So what's so funny is that, does anybody happen to know how many nursing homes are in New York? Just on 600 or so, probably? That's probably a good guess. Geographically, Montana can swallow you probably about 45 times, right? Geographically, they have 87 nursing homes in their state. I go, what do you do with your old people? Do you shoot them? Look, Grandpa's trying to run. I go, what are you doing with them all? The interesting part is that, you know, the city of New York has how many zillions of people, right? Just the city alone. Montana as a state has less than a million people that even live in the entire state. So that's why. But if you've never had a chance to see Montana, you should go out there. Because when you come to New York, when I was in New York with IPRO people, I was looking at the traffic. I don't know how you people can take all that traffic. I was thinking, oh my gosh, look at all these people. And you go to Montana, you think, oh my gosh, where are all the people? And there's nobody for miles. But anyway, so pressure sores is a new quality measure for the short stay people. Now this one, you're going to have to pay a little attention to. Because this one's kind of an interesting little measure. This is our first incidence quality measure for the post-acute people. The rest have been prevalence measures. This is now looking at over a course of time. Now, this compares the 14-day with the previous 5 days. So remember, the 5-day by itself is not looked at, but if it's used as an incidence, it will be. Now, the first option I agree with. On the 5-day Medicare assessment, there were no pressure sores, and pressure sores comes from M2A. And I understand that, so when they first popped in, they had nothing. That's cool. But on the 14-day, they had a stage 1 to 4 pressure area, so anything. Which then makes it appear as if, well, they had nothing when they came in, they got something in there, so can you follow, that one's okay, right? That would be something, it's like, okay, but we understand that. But it's only contingent, again, on making sure that someone understands the etiology of the area. So, but I understand the first one, but look at the second one. On the 5-day PPS, there was a pressure sore noted, okay? 1, 2, 3, or 4. And on the 14-day, the pressure sore worsened or failed to improve. Which means that if you had a stage 3 on the 5-day and a stage 3 on the 14-day, it's going to fly. And so the public doesn't know that you just can't heal a stage 3 pressure area in 3 days, 4 days. And the problem is, too, is that the public doesn't realize that the 5-day and the 14-day PPS assessment, they can overlap the days. So I could do a 5-day Medicare MDS and have the assessment reference date is day 8. And I can do a 14-day Medicare assessment where the assessment reference date is day 11. And so much of the time frame is the same time frame, so I won't show any improvement. But the public won't know that. So just be aware of that, that they will flag with either of those two conditions. Okay? Now, there are some risk adjustments to this one, which is kind of cool. So they look at if there's a history of a resolved ulcer, if they have problems with mobility, if they are incontinent, if they've got peripheral vascular disease or diabetes. So they do some risk adjusting here, so that's kind of nice. A low body mass index. So just as an FYI, that there are other things on the MDS that will risk adjust them again. And this is why it's important, my friends, that whoever is responsible for the MDS, different sections, understands how to code it, because you might code something that would risk adjust it to your benefit. Okay? And there are no exclusions. And pressure sores. What has the public been told about pressure sores? Well, first of all, they say pressure sores may be painful. Take a long time to heal. And so that would be something I would tell them if that was the reason why so-and-so flagged. And you'll get the resident level information. So a couple of weeks after your data is published on the Nursing Home Compare website, they've indicated that they will send you the resident level information so you'll know who flagged what, okay? And then they talk about complications that come from that. But what else they tell them is this, is that there are several things that nursing homes can do that may help prevent or treat pressure sores. Now, to step back real quick on the pain measure that was the second one we looked at, there is no pain wrap right now at the resident level, but they've indicated that probably in the next version of the MDS, there will be a pain wrap that you'll have to do. But there is a pressure sore wrap, right? The pressure ulcer is one of the last wraps that we do, but they basically, this says that you have within your, yes, let's see. Yeah, it's really, there really is nothing on the MDS. They'd have to look into that if they wanted to, but there really is no place on the MDS that talks about body mass index. Yeah, there is nothing on there. Yeah. Yeah, there's nothing on the MDS for that. But what they talk about is that there are ways that as a facility that you can prevent skin breakdown. And so one of the key pieces on the guidelines under the pressure ulcer wrap is it tells you all kinds of things that you should be doing to prevent pressure ulcers. Why? It's far less money that you spend to prevent than have to treat these things. Because how many billions of dollars are spent on wound treatments? But now, This is why you need to read this stuff, because I think this bottom piece right here is helpful for you. Some residents may get pressure sores even when the nursing home provides good preventative care. So they even tell the public that. So again, that's why it's very important for you to understand what the public has been told, so that you can reaffirm that and say, yes, you know, these people will get it. You know, there are some things that are outside of our control. We do as best we can, but when someone's at the end stage of their life and losing weight, we can't prevent everything. Okay? And that's it for the post-acute care measures. Isn't that fun? So there's three of them. Of those three, two of them you have wraps for. You can take care of them at the resident level. All right. Now we're going to jump into the chronic care measures. I'm a little man. Isn't he cute? Mr. Chronic Care. All right. There are 11 of these. We have three of the post-acute. We have 11 of the chronic care. The first one has to do with ADLs. Are ADLs a problem for anybody in this room? I have some history on that. The percent of people, you got the moderate to severe pain again, so you have the very similar one that you just sort of saw in post-acute, just a little difference, but the same pieces from the MDS. You have people high risk and low risk for pressure sores. This is our first, remember, our paired measure. So if we want to get information from one, we'll get the other one. People who are physically restrained, but the key for this one is daily. So that comes from P4 on the MDS. Then the new ones. People have become more depressed. Oh, social services people, this one's for you. Percent of low-risk residents who lose control of their bowels or bladder. Now, realize that they've stratified this to high risk and low risk, but why would they only have me look at the low risk? Why would that be important for me as a consumer? Well, why would I care about people who are low risk for, yes? Well, and the key is that you're indicating these people are incontinent. And if you've indicated that they're low risk, well then, why are they incontinent? So they're going to say, gosh, why do they have so many people who you've indicated who are at low risk for this? Why are they showing that they're incontinent? The people who have a catheter, remember the catheter, and so number 7 and number 8 are going to be a paired measure. Oh, the bedfast one. Now the public sees that. This is the new one. This kind of took the improvement in walking. Well, they kind of did a little twist on that, and they stuck it over here in the chronic care. These are people whose locomotion on the unit got worse. So they made it from a positive one to a negative one. And then now they've also, people who've had a urinary tract infection. So they mixed this up a little bit. They changed a lot of the chronic care measures around. The pain is the same, ADL is the same, restraints are the same, the pressure ulcers are different, now they're high risk and low risk instead of the facility admission profile. Infections is gone, but UTI stayed. Chair and bedfast is new, the mood one is new, decline in locomotion is new, incontinence is new, catheter is new. So you can see that most of these measures have now been revised and revamped and a lot of new things added for the public to see. Remember, the chronic care measures are going to be based on OBRA assessments. And it's not the admission MDS. It's the very first assessment after the admission. So they're going to look at any assessment after the admission MDS. They will use the admission MDS when it's... Did you just sneeze? They're going to use the admission MDS when it's a comparison for the an incidence quality measure. Again, if there's more than one... assessment in a target period, they were going to only use the most recent one. Okay? I've taken off glasses before throwing these things. I've taken off wigs. You'd be surprised what I've taken off. All right. Percent of residents whose need for help with daily activities has increased. This is the very first one. This has to do with ADLs. All right. Okay. Where do I begin with this one? If you would, look at section G. G1 on your MDS while I get some more pop. And you know, it is called pop, it's not called soda. The people in New York have it all wrong. They call it soda. No? What do you guys say up here? Oh yes, yay for you! People in New York, they call it soda. They're not strange, they're very unique. All right. Now, let's look at section G of the MDS. I'm gonna give you a little information. This is for all the people who don't do this section. So this is a heads up for all administrators or owners or anybody in your DLNs. This is an interesting section of the MDS. This is G1. I'm gonna explain to you about this section. First and foremost, when you look at G1 on the MDS, it talks about the activities of daily living. So these are all the tasks that the resident performs or you perform for them. As you'll notice that there are two columns of information that you collect on the MDS for ADLs. One's called self-performance, one is called support. Now, as an FYI for you, this is the most inaccurately coded section of the entire MDS. Okay? Now, what the columns mean, you'll see that each column then has its own legend to choose from. Self-performance means the resident's abilities to perform that task. What they did, not what that they're capable of, but what they actually did in that 7-day window. All shifts. So it's the resident's level of performance. And you can see here, you have several choices there. Zero means they're independent. One means they required some supervision. The next is that they required limited assistance, and then extensive assistance, and total dependence, or hey, the activity never happened at all. So it's the resident's level of performance, and you have your own codes there. The next column you have is support, and that's them bodies of staff, or how the staff member was involved in assisting that individual. And you can see the answers are very different. You have no setup, or setup, or one person helped, or two people physically helped, or it never happened. All right, it seems kind of straightforward, but it really isn't. Now, as an FYI for you, there are 11 ADLs, but you'll notice that four of them are in pink. Now, DONs can only answer this question. What are these pink ones? What do they mean? What are they? Why did they pick just these four? DON answers the question. And these are not, and so on your PRI, you know, you're collecting 60% of this, or, you know, percentage. The MDS could care less about percentages. If you're collecting the ADLs on the MDS the way you collect your PRIs, then you're incorrect. So, but what's the magic about these four? Are you DON? So she said late loss. But what does that mean? What does it mean? They're the last ones to go. So she's a DON and she knows all of that. She really must be planting good seed. You know what? She's gonna get the wildflower mix. She gets the big box of flowers. All right? So let me explain it to you that these are the late loss ADLs. And what she says is correct. That means that of all those other ADLs, they consider these to be the building blocks of care. That your ability to dress will diminish before your ability to eat. Your ability to take care of yourself with personal hygiene will go before you can toilet. And so, if you start to see problems in these areas, well then, the resident is really having problems. Would you agree with that? Now, to your administrators, actually to everybody, that there are several questions on the MDS that you'd want to consider as big guns. That whose response is on the MDS influences all four areas that we've been talking about. Areas meaning plan of care is area number one. Money is number two. Survey is number three. Public information is number four. The ADLs influence all four areas, okay? Especially the late loss ADLs. Now, from the money standpoint, administrators, do you realize that though there are 108 questions on the MDS that will determine your RUG category, correct? And based on how somebody marked this, this, and this, and this, and this, it'll slot them into whatever group. But I want to ask an administrator, what is the difference, if you know anything about Medicare Part A, you know people can classify into the rehab category. Let's say RHA, which is rehab high. So what is the difference between an RHA, an RHB, and an RHC, administrators? Now you can answer, you've already answered the question. Yes? So it has absolutely nothing to do with minutes? So the difference between an RHA and an RHC has nothing to do with minutes? It doesn't? She's right. She's 100% correct. Have you got a chicken yet? Would you like one? What will you do for one? Oh. You know what? She's absolutely right. The only difference between an RHA and an RHB and an RHC, and that can literally be hundreds of dollars, it has absolutely nothing to do with your physical therapy minutes. Not how many days of therapy was provided, but it's how somebody answered four stupid questions. A third of your money is based on four areas: bed mobility, transfer, eating, and toilet use. A third of the RUG category, because the only difference between an RHA and an RHC is the ADL score. The only difference between an SSA and an SSB and an SSC is your ADL score. The only difference between a CC1 and a CA1 is your ADL score. And so here's my question to you. How is your facility collecting this information? Who's responsible for this? Are you giving it to the person who's running out the door at 259? How many in-services have you done in your building on the ADLs? This is an in-service that should be given mandatory quarterly. This is not an ADL and you can give it once and then someone understands this. Heads up. This is an in-service that is mandatory all the time. Because the problem is that, and not to get into too much detail about this afternoon, because we're going to really go into detail this afternoon about the ADLs. But the problem is that, have all of you guys seen the movie Shrek? Have you seen the first Shrek? They're hilarious. But in the first movie, Shrek, Shrek is trying to tell the Eddie Murphy character, the donkey, that ogres like onions because onions have layers. All of these ADLs have layers. They're not intuitive. And so it also depends on their level of knowledge. I would not let somebody author my ADLs if they were in a hurry to go home or if they didn't understand them, because you know what? A third of your money is based on that. And if money's not important for you to give care, well then okay, then don't worry about this section. But if you are really the captain of the ship, then you will understand how your staff are collecting the information and just these four questions. I mean, just to begin with. But just so we know right now that this one's inaccurately coded, but from the quality measure standpoint, and which there's also an ADL for this, or a wrap on this for the ADLs. But what they're looking is at the residents' decline in these four late loss ADLs from one assessment to another. So where were they? And the interesting part about this is that they don't use the support column for data for this measure. They only use the resident self-performance. So what was their ability from one assessment to another? Did it diminish? And so they're looking at just the self-performance for the four late loss ADLs. And it has, just like we had with the pain, it has one of two options on how it looks at it. So number one is that late loss worsening when at least two of the following are true, which means that with the late loss ADLs, that the target score, which is the recent one, got worse by at least one level in two of them. So two of the ADLs changed for the worse by at least a value of one. So if on the previous MDS you had somebody's being independent in all four of these, and on the next assessment that was done, then two of these, they went from independent to requiring supervision. So they went from a zero to a one. So when the score goes up, then it's a change for the worse. Because when the score goes up in the numbers, it means they're harder to care for or they require more assistance. So option number one, if two changed by one, and for those people who collect ADLs, that's very easily done, okay? Or if that doesn't fit, then it will also flag if then one of them changed by two. So if two change by one, or if one changes by two, it will flag. If the score was if the score on the MDS was an 8, because that is a valid option for self-performance, they will translate that to a 4. So if somebody was an 8 for something, like transfer, then they'll consider that to be a 4. Okay? There's no risk adjustments, but there are some exclusions. Obviously, the exclusions are if somebody in the previous assessment was all fours. Well, they can't get any worse. If they're at the bottom of the barrel, they can't get any worse, so they'll be excluded. Number two, comatose, end-stage disease and hospice care. And the reason why they pick that is because they assume that they're going to decline anyway. So they'll be excluded from the measure. Why is it important? Well, they're going to tell the public that, you know, most people want to care for themselves, and that the facility needs to make efforts to make sure that people don't decline. Now, I said it earlier this morning, I don't know if anybody heard that, but does anybody happen to know that the ADLs are very important because there certainly is a RAP, but it's also a federal tag number. There's actually a federal tag number that's associated with ADLs. Anybody happen to know what that is? It's F310. So you're looking at that to find out if declines are avoidable or unavoidable. And so you'll want to make sure that if you're the director of nursing looking at ADLs and even the MDS coordinator, please go read what's required of you by law under ADLs, F310 of the state operations manual. But basically they're saying that, you know, some people are going to require some help, but your job is to make sure that you try and figure out why they're declining and prevent it if possible. But again, they're very nice by saying some residents will lose function in their basic tasks even though the nursing home provides good care. I mean, it's almost like a big duh. Well, people there decline, I mean, that's why they're there. Some things you can prevent, other things you can't. So, but the thing is that they want to make sure that, just like I with those four ladies in the front with being incontinent, are you looking at why somebody is declining and making sure that you're getting in there? Now, here's the key for this section. This is so contingent on documentation, and documentation for this section is so goofy that it looks like your people are declining when they truly haven't. It's just simply data collection is different. So again, that's something you're going to want to explain if the public asks. And we're going to spend more time this afternoon going through the ADLs. Percent of residents who spent most of their time in a bed or a chair. So this is the bed fast. This is G6A on the MDS. And so basically on the target assessment, so this is not instance, this is a prevalence measure that looks at, okay, on the on that G6A, did you have a check? Yes or no? And guess what? There's no risk adjustments. There's only one exclusion, is the admission MDS or coma. Coma. Okay? So you mark it on the MDS for bed fast, and it's going to pop up. And why is this important to the public? Why do they care about this? Well, it says staying in bed or chair affects you in lots of ways. That if you stay in there the majority of the time, then you're going to get weak. And if anybody ever has been in here on bed rest, You know that to be a fact. If, even when you're ill at home for a while, you've got the flu or something's going on, and you stay in bed for a couple of days, you feel more tired because you've been in bed the whole time, and you just feel weak. And so that's what they're saying, is that they're afraid that if people are spending most of their time in their bed or their chair, and remember, to the MDS, this definition is whether it's their choice to stay or your choice. Doesn't make a difference to the MDS. You code it regardless. But that people, maybe if they're spending all their time in bed or chair, it could be a sign of depression. It could be a whole host of signs, and that's, at least it's an indicator for that. Okay? So again, now they go in a lot of detail with this one, that you should try to get people out of their bed. You should try to get them to exercise, get them out of their room, because it is very important for them to stay physically active and emotionally with the program. So they're really saying, gosh, look at the people here, because this is not a good thing. Okay? Percent of residents who have become more depressed or anxious. Is this like, how many people would like to do this or have done this? Right? That's my favorite graphic. You're like you're beating your head on the ground. This is a new quality measure talking about percent of residents who have become more depressed or anxious. Oh, social services! Please go to section E of the MDS. This is also on page, I think, 4. It's right next to the ADLs. Do you think this is an important section? It's in pink! It has red little numbers by it. It has a bunch of black diamonds. Just like the ADLs, this influences every single area, from plan of care to money, quality measures, or quality indicators. So this is another big gun of the MDS. And I would have to say that this is right up there, running neck and neck for inaccuracy on the MDS. And now, this is where I go out on a limb for social services people. I have a question for you. Is in most of your facilities, is this a section that social services is responsible for authoring? Okay, who is it in your facility? Okay, nursing. Anybody else have anything different? I have a question for you. Does the MDS manual or the RA user manual tell you who's to do what section of the MDS? Well then, if they don't tell you who's to do what section, how do you know who's to do what section? You duke it out? But how do you make that decision? How do you decide who's to do what section of the MDS? And you know what? Her comment is very well taken. They just figure out, okay, well, who's to do what? Or someone has made a policy someplace, or the DON made a decision, or the MDS coordinator said. And that's what's interesting about that is that I can go to a bunch of facilities. Like, for example, who's social services in here? Anybody to make a difference? What sections of the MDS are you responsible for? Do you know? Filling out. What was that again? Okay, so A, B, E, F, P2, Q, Q1, and an R. All right, is there another social services person that does that anything different? I'm sure there is. Okay, that's it? Okay, and so you want to come work here at this facility. Because in her facility, they only do like the section A, B, A, A, and that's it. But now do you see how all of a sudden, come back to me. All of a sudden that you see where in her facility, she's responsible for a lot, right? And in your facility, I'm not responsible for a lot. So what happens if all of a sudden I was a social service person at your building, and I went there, Because, you know, I'd be in trouble. Here's the reason why. I will tell you that the MDS manual gives you a hint. They don't tell you who to do what section of the MDS. They do give you some pointers, like if it's like the test for balance or the range of motion should be done by a health professional, blah, blah, blah. But they do give you one piece of advice. And the piece of advice is this, is that it is the participation of many people to fill out the MDS, but that whoever is responsible for their sections of the MDS, they have to have, and I quote, the requisite knowledge to do so. So how do you just arbitrarily say, well, you're going to do that, unless you know I know that? So if all of a sudden I go from your facility and I go to your facility, I won't know how to fill out all those sections, will I? But a lot of times, this is where, again, I go back to this testing and having it written out, because if I were to interview at that building, I would say, you'd want to tell me, if you come in this building as social services, you will be responsible for these sections of the MDS. Are you comfortable with that? So you just can't say because you are this discipline, you will do that. You have to first make sure that they have the requisite knowledge to do so. So I'd be very careful on just assigning it without knowing what their abilities are. Now, this section of the MDS, think of the MDS, if you're looking at it as an entire assessment, in halves. And it's not really truly halves, but we'll just say that. But part of the MDS, the answers that you put on there are quantitative, based on the number of days, the number of visits, the number of meds, the number of something, which means that, and there's probably about, I think I've actually listed them out, the fields that are quantitative, like for example, section E is quantitative, section G is quantitative, section 04, P7, P8, these are all things that you look at the record and you're counting up something. So the value that you place in that field is based on tracking. That make sense? The other part of the MDS is then based on qualitative. I'm going to do an assessment, like vision. It's not based on number of times I saw something. It's like, well, can you see? Or your memory. It's not based on number of times you can remember things. It's that, well, what was it? So it's qualitative. So this is a section that's tracking. So while social services may be responsible for going and looking for this information, they are not the authors of this data. That's the biggest problem with this section. Here you have now, for the first time, the public looking at people who are depressed, and it comes from E1 on the MDS, E2, and then like K4, which is over in eating. But I want to tell you something about this section is that look at the information that's on here. Resident made negative statements, repetitive verbalizations, and so forth. And the problem is that long-term, all of you, working in your facilities, you get used to this. You get used to people on the Alzheimer's unit complaining or calling out or trying to do this, trying to do that, and nobody ever documents it because it's normal for that person. The MDS could care less. It wants to know, did this or did this not happen in 30 days? And the key word in this field, if you look at the top of E1, it says indicators. Doesn't say, this one makes it seem like it's depression, but it just says indicators. It's up to social services to figure out through the RAP process if it truly is depression or sad mood or anxiety. But it just says an indicator was present in the last 30 days, which makes it tough for us now, because the rest of the MDS is over 7, boom, this one's over a month. And the key piece on this one, the key word is irrespective of the assumed cause. And that's the key. They don't care if they have Alzheimer's. They don't care if it's whatever it is. Did they cry? Did they complain? Did they call out? Regardless. And there's the problem, is that from a social services standpoint, in your facility, where do you pull this from? Nurses notes? Well, nurses don't document this. If it's normal, do they? Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. If you're looking straight at nurses notes, but would you say every single day they do? This is based on frequency. This is a tracking field. You can't just say it once. You can't say it once, it's going to be, well, woohoo, I just did the whole section. This is based on tracking. But here's what they're going to do. They're going to look at this section of the MDS, and they're going to provide to the public people who they think have gotten worse in their mood. And they pull it right from section E1. And you know what? The DAVE project, they put out, oh, by the way, the DAVE project has actually put out a newsletter, and it just came out, I think, yesterday, about the hot tips and things like that. And I'll give you the website at the end of the day. But they just published some stuff for providers about what they've been finding. But this is the first time I've ever heard an entity say that facilities were undercoding. And this is a section that they say you're undercoding on, is this mood. But here we go. So this is an incidence quality measure looking at moods in your building on the chronic care people. And it looks at residents whose mood scale score. What's a mood scale? You ever heard of it? You should. Again, you should, as of the quality measure, as of January 22nd, you should have gotten some kind of training on this. The mood scale is now a scale that was developed within the MDS. And I'm gonna show it to you right here in a minute, but their mood scale score from one assessment to the next assessment got worse. You can only have a point value of 8, okay? So here's how they figure out the mood scale. They look at the MDS, okay? And here's the mood scale definition. The count of the number of the following 8 conditions on the target assessment. So looking at these 8 conditions that you have in your handout, and you'll get a point if you meet the criteria for this. Okay, so the first one is any verbal expressions of distress. And it could be any one of these is marked, either E1A, C, E, F, G, or H. Any one of those marked will now, point number one has been hit. Okay, the next one is show signs of crying, it's just E1M. Next one is motor agitation, it's E1N. Leaves food uneaten, K4C. So now they've gone outside of the mood section, they've gone over to dietary, because they're assuming if someone's leaving some of their food, that might be a symptom of depression. Little do they know.